This was week two of the Indiana General Assembly's 2013 session, but it was a former federal lawmaker, not a state legislator, who grabbed most of the headlines. Mike Pence, who spent the past 12 years in Congress, officially completed his long-sought move to the executive branch on Monday, taking the oath of office to become Indiana's 50th governor. Hi, I'm John Schwanes, and this is Indiana Lawmakers. In a moment, the new governor will join us here in studio to reflect on his first few days in office and, presuming I ask the right questions, give us a sneak peek at next week's State of the State address. First, though, here's a quick legislative update from Brittany Muncy of the StateHouseFile.com, a service of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism.
1,500 people braved freezing temperatures Monday to watch Mike Pence become Indiana's 50th governor.
The time is now. The air is cold. So let's get back inside and get to work.
The next day, Pence's budget director, Chris Adkins, presented a two-year spending plan. The budget includes increased funding for transportation and Medicaid, and a little more for education. But schools would have to earn the extra money starting in the plan's second year.
And so we would base them on factors like school quality or the A through F grading, the third grade reading passage rates for the iRead 3 test, and the non-waiver graduation rates.
Pence's budget includes a 10% income tax cut. Legislative leaders have expressed concern about the plan and say the state may need that money for other programs. But Pence says the tax cut would put more than $200 in the pocket of every Hoosier, and he says it would boost economic development.
90% of our businesses and enterprises in this state file their taxes under the individual income tax rate. So the most effective way to lower taxes on job creators, in my judgment, one of the most effective ways to jumpstart the economy is to lower the personal income tax rate.
The House Ways and Means Committee will take up Pence's budget in the coming weeks. For Indiana Lawmakers and the StateHouseFile.com, I'm Brittany Muncy.
Thanks, Brittany. Back in a moment with Governor Mike Pence. From the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park. Four locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
One of the first congressional races I ever covered as a reporter for the now-closed Indianapolis News pitted a seven-term incumbent against a political unknown, a 29-year-old attorney from Columbus named Mike Pence. The year was 1988. Might as well go ahead and say it. Mike Pence lost that race and a rematch 2 years later, but in 2000, he tried again, and this time he won handily, launching a six-term congressional career that some would say culminated in his election to the chairmanship of the House Republican Conference, the third highest ranking post in the chamber's GOP leadership. Now he's back in Indiana, and as of this past Monday, back in leadership. This time, though, he's got the top job in a very elite caucus, a caucus, you might say, of one. I'm pleased to welcome Indiana's 50th governor, Mike Pence. Thank you for being here. I appreciate it. And congratulations.
Thank you, John. Great
I do
to see
remember,
you.
Yeah, back in those days, you were the guy with the dark hair, as I recall.
But so then again, were you.
I was too, I guess. What happened to us? You've done well, I would say, for yourself.
Likewise.
A lot of ground I want to cover here, but let's start where you did this week with your by taking the oath of office, and you launched your at least first 4 years. We'll get to that question later in the governor's office. Your speech, I thought, was notable for a couple of reasons. Number one, of course, all those references to torch and flame and bright light. I think you're trying to warm up folks who are standing outside in 20 degree temperature. But the theme of optimism, we'll stipulate that all inaugural addresses at every level are, I guess, the political equivalent of coaches giving a pregame pep talk. But this seemed to really stress this notion that Indiana's on the cusp, the brink of something special. Why are you so sure that the best times do lie ahead?
Well, I think the progress we've made in the last 8 years, which is owing to my predecessor, Governor Mitch Daniels, it's owing to leaders in both political parties in the General Assembly and to thousands of public servants and state employees that have really made Indiana the fiscal envy of the country.
And you mentioned, of course, Mitch Daniels, you mentioned actually a number of former governors, your predecessors, and complimented them in the speech. But you did save a special spot for your media predecessor because of this notion of setting the stage. Put you on the spot here. I know your flattery is sincere because you've appointed several dozen of his cabinet members and former top agency heads, so you clearly like what was in place. Mm. Put you on the spot. What was the best decision or accomplishment that he made in his 8 years? And I'll give you even a little bit longer time to think, what was his biggest mistake and failure from which you'll learn?
Well, I'll leave the latter for others to judge. I will tell you that I think the enduring legacy of the Daniels administration will be really introducing a culture of excellence in our state government. Look, as I said from the podium, as a lifelong Hoosier, without apology, I think from what I've seen of Hoosiers, whether it's our soldiers downrange, whether it be volunteers at times of crisis, Indiana's the heart of the heartland. Hoosiers are the best people on earth. They're caring. They're generous in times of need. They're patriotic. They're resilient. But I think what Governor Daniels leaves behind is a government that is on its way to being as good as our people. He introduced performance metrics. He introduced accountability. He brought fiscal responsibility, even during difficult economic times. That has created an opportunity where we have choices to make. Their choices, I really believe that the overwhelming majority of states around the country wish they could make. But it really has Indiana poised, as I like to say, to go from good to great. My ambition, other than giving a short speech out in the cold on Monday,
13 minutes, I think, is what we did. So.
was really to say to Hoosiers that really, given the progress that we've made, and given the greatness of our people, that we have no choice but to seize this moment in the life of our state. But we must remain bold, we must remain persistent and optimistic, and I really do believe Indiana could take our rightful place as the leading state in the Midwest and one of the fastest growing state economies in the country.
And as you take the torch, to borrow your imagery from Mitch Daniels, we've seen a lot of stories written in recent weeks about the different leadership styles that the two of you bring, and largely because of the cultures from which you emerge. Mitch Daniels, before he was the state's chief executive, came out of the executive branch, both, of course, in Washington and the executive suite at Eli Lilly and Company. You've spent your entire career, as it relates to public service, in a deliberative legislative body where you're one of fill in the blank. How does that play to your advantage or disadvantage? I mean, is that a legitimate comparison, or do you think that people are scraping to find a story to write before the administration actually got underway?
Well, I'll leave comparisons to others. I will tell you that I hope my experience as a working...
You already left the biggest failure to others. You only get two of those. One
well,
more
I,
than...
I hope my experience as a lawmaker will make me better as an executive. I have a tremendous amount of respect for men and women who make the sacrifices necessary to serve in a legislative branch of government, whether it's at the state capitol or whether it's in the nation's capitol. And as a working legislator, I had a president of my own party who I dealt with. I had a president of the opposite party that I dealt with. And my ambition as governor is to lay out a vision, to offer specific goals, to offer proposals. But as we initiated even before we were sworn in, John, my intention is to sit down with every member of the General Assembly, Republicans and Democrats, hear what their vision is, what their priorities are, and work as much as possible in a collaborative way.
You've even given yourself a deadline, correct? By the end of February, you want to get through all 150, is that right?
At the latest. Later today, I'll be headed back, and we're having a lot of sit-downs. And, as I said, I've been in the majority, I've been in the minority. I was elected both times to represent my constituents, and I think everyone who serves in the General Assembly has a right to be heard, and I look forward to forging those relationships in the days and weeks ahead.
I'm sure it was not coincidence then that your first meeting after you took the oath of office was to meet with the four caucus leaders of the House and Senate. What did you tell them in that closed-door session?
Well, I told them the door's open, and I thought it was important that we meet with the Republican and Democrat leadership of the House and Senate together, and we intend to do that as we discuss that day on an ongoing basis as their schedules permit. I really do believe that this is a very unique time in the life of our state, and as I said last Monday, only together are we going to meet this moment. Only together are we going to seize this opportunity. And I was very grateful that Republican and Democrat leadership were willing to meet. It was my very first meeting in the office, and we look forward to doing that again and often.
Well, the message clearly resonated because I saw some of the comments that Tim Lannon, the Senate Democratic leader, and Scott Piloth, his Republican counterpart, offered after that. It was very generally upbeat assessment of your start, of your debut, at least that day.
Thank you.
I think they lauded the sort of the notion of transparency. I know you've talked about a transparency portal. You've talked about trying to tackle some of the same agenda items that probably are bipartisan in nature, economic, education types of things. The one outlier, if I may use that term, or the fly in the ointment, if
excuse
this week, was what bubbled up actually a few days before the swearing-in, which was you've talked about an agenda. It was a roadmap, in fact. You talked
right.
about it throughout the campaign, very specific sorts of things, six things, and again, primarily education, economic development.
Right.
Here comes tort reform. You have a member of the Senate, Mike Delf, who said that he was asked by your administration to carry a bill that would effectively impose on the loser in civil cases the obligation to pay all costs and fees associated, which critics would say would discourage the process. Now, the reason I bring that up is there seemed to be a lot of confusion. Your press secretary pointed to your chief of staff for answers. Your chief of staff pointed to your press secretary. Before we go any further, because I know the issues are economic development and
right.
education, what is the deal? Tell us on,
yeah.
on are, is this really part of your, is this a tweak
right.
of the roadmap, or is this just... was there a misinterpretation of what Mike Delf was doing?
Well, let me say that we ran a relentlessly positive, substantive campaign for this job, and I'm somebody who believes that a leader should begin with the end in mind. That if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you. And so we created this roadmap. We really wrote down six very specific goals that I derived. Not just on the campaign trail, but frankly, after years of talking to Hoosiers, and they are in no particular order, I think, of all of equal importance. It's to increase private sector employment and increase investment in our traditional areas of strength, to improve the quality of our workforce, improve our outcomes in elementary schools, our graduation rates, and improve the health, safety, and well-being of Hoosiers, Hoosier families, especially our kids. Over the course of the campaign, John, we offered, I think, about 50 different proposals that we thought would move Indiana in the direction of those goals, but that was by no means intended to be exhaustive. And there were proposals that we had thought through in what I called my idea factory. We had hundreds of policy volunteers generating ideas. And, you know, my attitude is, I've got an open mind, not an empty mind. I want to listen to legislators. We want to have an ongoing dialogue with legislators. But what I intend, as I said at my cabinet meeting this week, what I intend to hold our administration to and to encourage the General Assembly to advance is policies that will move our state in the direction of making meaningful progress against those six goals. And we're going to consider lots of different policies to advance that.
Fair enough. I would, in the tradition of, since you're a former political talk show host yourself, you would find it incumbent on me to drill down further. But in the interest of time and the fact that we do have other topics, we'll move on and see how that particular issue unfolds. But the roadmap.
Right.
And that also unfolded in the budget presentation that your administration made to the State Budget Committee one day
right.
after you took office. Cornerstone of that is enough cash reserves to offset a 10%. This is something you talked about throughout the campaign. Individual income tax reduction
right.
from 3.4% to 3.06%. So far, a chilly reception from even some of your fellow Republicans. How much political capital are you willing to spend on that tax cut?
Well, let me say, I was very grateful to have the opportunity to present our recommended budget, and We'll be talking about that in our State of the State address to members.
And feel free to, it's just the two of us talking here, so feel free to, you know, if you want to float any trial balloons or any bombshells, any surprise.
Let me tell you, you said the cornerstone is tax relief, and I actually think there might be more corners on that building. You know, when we were crafting that budget during the course of this transition, I said to the team, first and foremost, is we have to continue Indiana on the pathway of fiscal responsibility. We have to have an honestly balanced budget. That was of first importance. I also thought it was important that that we hold the line on spending, and this budget does that. Actually, this budget grows about a percentage point lower than actual appropriations approved by the General Assembly over the last 8 years on average.
And for those who haven't followed it as closely, it's basically flatlining everything with the exception of some educational programs, K-12 education, 1% each year, university funding, some child development services, and some other things. But generally, it's a flatline budget.
Well, it's a lean budget because these are times where I think Indiana would do well to continue to practice that fiscal discipline that has won us the national reputation that we have, and is creating a framework for a lot of investment in the state and a lot of potential investment in the state in the ways that will create jobs. But in addition to those things, you know, we've also funded our priorities. We fully funded Medicaid with the revenue forecast. We've increased funding to the Department of Child Services at a significant level and are committed to reform in that area. But we also look for ways, after funding our current priorities, to find new resources for education, both K-12 and higher education. And we found significant resources to invest in roads and bridges and infrastructure in the state. After doing all of those things, we also truly believe that to seize this moment in the life of our state, we ought to take the opportunity to pass an across-the-board tax cut for every Hoosier in the city and on the farm. That would do a couple of things. And number one, it would put about $500 million back into our economy for Hoosiers to save, invest, and spend. Number two, as you know, more than 90% of business enterprises in Indiana file their taxes under the individual income tax rate. So the best way, in my judgment, to bring tax relief to job creators who are facing higher federal taxes as we speak, and the medical device industry in Indiana is facing higher taxes on top of the tax increases that were just allowed for in the fiscal cliff negotiations and resolution. I think the best way to lower taxes for small business owners and job creators is to lower the personal income tax rate. And also, if we do it, according to our analysis, it'll be official. Indiana will be the lowest tax state in the Midwest. And that'll give us even a stronger story to tell in attracting investment and attracting jobs. Now, the good news
has been effective
is,
with Illinois. I know that was a stated goal of the Daniels administration when they were raising corporate income taxes, for instance. I guess it was a good calling card.
And the thing about this too, John, is at the end of doing all of the things I just described, honestly balanced budget, holding the line on spending, funding our priorities and finding additional resources for schools and roads and providing room for tax relief, we still are able to maintain historic levels of budget reserves to keep that balance sheet strong. And that's why I've said this is a jobs budget. This is a budget that is designed to lay a framework for continuing excellence and fiscal responsibility in Indiana, but it's also a budget that really is designed to jumpstart this economy and get Hoosiers that are struggling across the state back to work.
Of course, as you'll recall, Mitch Daniels' first tax proposal, a surtax on the wealthiest Hoosiers temporary, got shot down by the General Assembly, including members of his own caucus. So I guess you can live to fight another battle if, in fact, it doesn't happen this session. But I'm guessing, based on the answer you just gave me, you do want to see this come to fruition.
Well, I really believe, number one, let me say I have enormous respect for members of the General Assembly, and I welcome the dialogue that's taken place so far and will take place in the weeks and months ahead. But the budget that we presented this week, I really do believe, is a budget that reflects the priorities. It's a commitment to fiscal responsibility, but also it really puts a focus on jump-starting this economy. There's 250,000 Hoosiers out of work. And we've got 8% unemployment in Indiana. And so we wanted to bring forward a proposal that uses our fiscal strength in some respect through tax relief and funding our priorities to get this economy moving.
I promised you I'd get back to Medicaid, and we will briefly, and we're running out of time, unfortunately. But there are a million things we could talk about, certainly. $29 billion probably we could talk about, size of the budget. But with Medicaid, it is fully funded in the sense that the projected growth,
right.
But it doesn't cover the potentially hundreds of thousands of Hoosiers that the Obama administration envisioned when it promoted and lobbied so hard for the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. Are you worried about how that's going to play with those Hoosiers? Where do they go? Where do they turn? Again, probably a show in and of itself. But the prospect of federal dollars flowing in to help offset that, members of your own party have suggested maybe that is a good deal, maybe something to look at.
Well, let me say, I think any decision on the expansion of Medicaid, which, as you said, it was initially mandated under the Affordable Care Act, but the Supreme Court said that that could not be mandated, but states would have that option. I think any decision that Indiana would make in that regard should be framed around two principles. Is it fiscally responsible in the long term? And of equal importance, can we continue to bring about the kind of innovative health care reform, like the Healthy Indiana Plan, that we've been advancing with great effectiveness and great success? I think the fiscal responsibility, the ability for Indiana to continue to be a leader in healthcare and innovation, I think that should bookend any consideration of expanding Medicaid.
We're effectively out of time, but I promised myself I'd ask you. Last time we were together in a TV studio under lights, it was your show. You were the host. I was the semi-regular guest. You asked always pertinent questions. I'm asking you now, what's the question that I haven't asked you today, and in fact, no member of the State House Press Corps has asked you in recent days, that you would ask if you were wearing your old hat of yourself?
That I would ask of
myself.
Yeah,
I mean, this is your chance to let it all out. What's the question that somebody's asking?
I struggle a little bit with that, I might, if you were
good thing
in,
you left
if
this
you were turned
went
around
politics,
I might ask you about the First Lady, and I have to tell you I've never been prouder of my wife than this last weekend. My wife was the not only the honorary chairman but ran all the events. We wanted an inaugural weekend that was a all Indiana celebration. We had a family fun day. We had an inaugural ball that almost 2,000 Hoosiers took advantage of.
A new tuxedo
of.
Your mother bought you, so what more could you?
A praise and worship service at the convention center, and we were able in the course of that to collect food for the Midwest Food Bank. My wife's an amazing person. She's going to be a great First Lady.
Good political answer. That's the third question you kind of dodged, but we'll get you. You got to come back now before the season, so we'll ask those questions and the others. I really do appreciate your being here. I know it's been a busy week, and I appreciate your spending time with us here on Indiana Lawmakers. Again, my guest has been former six-term Republican Congressman Mike Pence, better known as of earlier this week as Governor Mike Pence. On the next Indiana Lawmakers, our expert panel weighs in on school reform. Time now for another conversation with someone I've known since the late 1980s, Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. And your hair hasn't changed colors. So good interview, I thought. I appreciated the governor coming on this week. I still don't know, though, if tort reform is part of his agenda, and I still don't know how much political capital he's willing to expend on the tax cut.
And we don't know where he's going on Medicaid expansion, those kinds of things as well. And I think that's par for the course for the first week. And he set some broad themes in the inaugural address, inspired a lot of people with some of the things that he said. But now it's when the rubber meets the road. The State of the State address is where he has to begin to get specific. And people are expecting him to start detailing what he's willing to do, what he doesn't want to do, outline his legislative agenda a lot more specifically than he's been talking about in his roadmap and in the inaugural address. And it's not going to make everybody happy. We know that from seeing even Mitch Daniels in recent years, you know, preach to the Republican choir in the legislature. Not everybody was happy with all the things that he wanted to do, even within his own party. But that's part of the job of being in that big boy chair in room 206. You know, you have to lead, and not everybody's going to be happy about the way that you choose to do it. And the legislature does have a role, and they are going to want to know what he wants to do, and then they will respond.
And I asked Tim this, and I'll ask you as well. Again, having emerged from that culture, from a legislative culture, is he better equipped, perhaps, than somebody who hasn't had that sort of give and take to deal with lawmakers? Or is it a wash when push comes to shove and I've got my agenda and you've got yours, does that all go out the window?
I think mostly the latter, but certainly we saw some difficulty in 2005, the first year of the Daniels administration, where a guy with no legislative experience came in and just thought that there was really only one branch of state government. Mike Pence understands that there's a very specific, very definitive, and very broad role for the legislative branch to play, and he's willing to involve himself with it. He's meeting with all 150 legislators through the end of February, and he understands that there are three branches of state government.
And I'll put on your prognostication cap. When we fast forward to the end of this session, presumably by April 29th, barring special session, does he get what he wants?
Well, I think that everybody will get a little bit of what they want. You know, we certainly don't know where the fiscal forecast is going to be, and that's going to be the key thing for determining the budget, and the budget's going to be what everybody's looking at.
Very good. We'll leave it there. See you next week, Ed. Thank you. For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity and Bright House Network. Just go to Hoosier TV and look for Indiana Lawmakers under News. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis. We're back again next week. Until then, take care.
What happens when bright ideas meet world-class infrastructure?
You can discover new ways to treat cancer.
Understand our planet.
Understand our galaxy.
To learn more, visit PurdueResearchPark.com.